Welcome to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast, where we hear from some of the most relevant, up-to-date, informational speakers in our industry. In episode 32, Trent Meyer, Executive Vice President, Dot Technology Corp, tells his story, Farming Reimagined, Dot Autonomous Power Platform.
Thanks. Thanks everyone for sticking around to the end of the day. It's a pleasure to be here. Haven't been to Brandon for a few years, but our first two children were born here in Brandon, so we do have a family history here. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about DOT, the autonomous power platform that we developed along with our sister company Seedmaster, both of which I'm the executive vice president of, which is a fancy way to say that Norbert, the president and founder, hired me to make sure that we have enough money for him to do whatever the heck he wants and build all the coolest stuff out there. So I'm still here, so I guess I'm doing okay. David did a great job of explaining some of the sensor technology that's out there today, and I'm sure convincing everyone without a doubt that that it's reliable and it's the right thing to adopt. So I'm going to take you through a bit of a journey as to how we got to where we are with DOT and some of the implications that we see on the farm and in the marketplace in general. So first I'm going to play a video. I want to preface it by saying that it's somewhat inaccurate now. We made it last year in June, and I'll correct some of the things once we get through it. But as you can imagine, this kind of technology is moving quickly, and we're changing things almost on a weekly basis to improve it. And so I was just speaking with Corey, our marketing manager up at the back, saying that we better start looking at our next cut of this video so that we can correct some of these things. So hopefully this works for us.
Agriculture is moving and evolving at an incredible pace. It's an exciting time to be a farmer, but a challenging one too. High machinery costs, lower value of trade-ins, shortage of skilled labor, and an increasing amount of hours in the field. Isn't it time farming was reimagined? Say hello to DOT, a diesel-powered, hydraulically driven platform set to revolutionize the future of farming. Collaborating with leading equipment manufacturers from around the globe, DOT integrates with any implement designed as DOT ready. The DOT power platform is a U shape. When it moves into position, the four lifting arms allow it to become one with the implement. The arms engage with the implement frame, and the hydraulic rams lift the implement. Once the implement reaches its resting position, dowels on DOT fit into holes in the frame of the implement. The unit is now ready to transport to the field and start working. The field can be mapped using satellite imagery or by driving the field to map obstacles such as sloughs, telephone poles, or tree lines, or a combination of the two. Once the map has been loaded, DOT uses GPS to travel the prescribed farmer-approved route to sub-inch accuracy. If an unmapped obstacle is encountered or DOT drifts from its path, it halts movement and sends a message to the operator. DOT has four independent, hydraulically driven wheels. The steering of each wheel is controlled by a hydraulic ram with an embedded, digitally controlled sensor. Whether in transport or field operating position, this system keeps DOT precisely online with the prescribed route map. If it varies from the path, the engine shuts down. When in the yard, DOT is operated with a remote. To increase safety even further, a second emergency stop remote can be activated to shut down the engine and all operations. Behind the stainless steel panels is the heart of DOT. The first panel contains four hydrostatic pumps, one for each individual wheel. The second compartment contains a 4.5-liter, 163-horsepower, Tier 4 Cummins diesel engine that powers the hydrostatic drives and the rest of the system. The last two panels are screens to cover both the engine radiator and the oil cooling system. Designed by a farmer engineer with efficiency in mind, the DOT Power Platform will have a limited release in 2018 before being more widely launched in 2019. For more information, or to sign up to receive the latest news on the Dot Power platform, go to c.run.com or email info@c.run.com.
So, I'm sure I'm going to be well over time here, but so just to give you a bit of insight into innovation in our organization, you know, a lot of people have asked, Norbert, how did you even come up with this? And in short, what we do is we try to remove as many variables that are held constant until we get to a point where there's a way to truly innovate. And one of those barriers or one of those variables that is assumed in today's modern agriculture is that there's got to be a tractor to pull an implement. You don't either have self-propelled implements or you have a tractor to pull the implement. And that's something that Norbert rethought as he was going down the path of trying to make an autonomous seeder. So that's where he started out 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago. He saw where broadacre farming had come. Larger seeders, high costs, very high capital outputs, a lot of risk on the farmer's side with respect to that capital expense and that it was devaluing much quicker than it was actually depreciating on his books. And that really came from a variation in farm sizes. As many of you know, if you own a large seeder, which has impacted our company, Seedmaster, their secondary market for those seeders is limited. And that really started to get Norbert's the wheels going in Norbert's mind around how he could make something that was had more value to the farmer. You know, to be clear, we have a Norbert's home farm where he grew up, still our research farm, and so Norbert has passed it on to his son-in-law Owen, but is still heavily involved in the farm. So he's not developing it from a machinery perspective; he was developing from a farmer perspective. And what he saw, you know, were all of these things that we had been brought to the forefront, mostly in many cases because we didn't have the labor to run it. We had shrinking labor supply in rural areas, and most importantly, we didn't have the right skills within the labor force to run the higher tech machines. So instead of running two 40-foot machines, you run an 80-foot machine. You cut that down, you put your specialized guy on that unit. The sprayers, you're up to 160 and more. Those types of variables or those types of growth pieces. And really, Seedmaster was part of a lot of this. We either were, you know, first, second, third mover in any of these given categories, and so we understand where it came from, and we knew what the driver was because, you know, we spent a lot of time with our farmer customers, and they tell us what they want. We made them things that they wanted. So when you start looking at what bigger can cause, or what bigger equipment can bring to your farm, other than some savings on the labor side and efficiencies, it's creating a whole bunch of other more difficult pieces. One of them that, you know, there's a gentleman north of the city here that does a lot of work on controlled traffic farming, and that's, you know, the compaction impact of larger equipment is significant. And when you look at the ratio of power that goes into moving a tractor as opposed to pulling the implement behind it, it's in the range of 20 to 30% is just moving your tractor down the field. And that really, at the end of the day, comes from the amount of weight that we're putting on it to get the traction actually to the ground. And so when you start adding all these things up, they become glaring inefficiencies. And that's where Norbert started to look. He started with, I want to make an autonomous seeder. Then he started looking at, you know, how do I justify an engine that's tied to a seeder and an hydraulic system that's tied to the seeder all year when it's, you know, really a 4 to 6, maybe 8 weeks a year that you're using it. So on this bigger is really better, Norbert eventually came to Dot, and I'll explain a little bit about the platform in a moment, but one thing that we loved was when Case came out with this autonomous tractor just under a year before we were about to launch. Because we knew that if a small company from Regina, Saskatchewan launched what, you know, was projected to be one of the first larger scale autonomous power units, we'd be probably laughed out of the room. So we were quite happy. We knew it was coming. We had some put out some RFPs to technology providers who had declined to do business with us because they had other projects that didn't allow them to participate. So we knew something was probably coming. We didn't know if it would come before us or after us. But we were really happy because, you know, we feel at the end of the day, David, you know, was talking earlier about all these sensors, and at the end of the day, those sensors still need to move through the field, some of them. Some of them can stay static or be spread throughout the field, but we still got to farm. We still got to move through the field. So at some point, you need power, and you need to move through the field, like, you know, as has been referred to by some as a mule, and we think that we have a pretty good mule. The reason that we think that it's a lot better than this is that within this confined envelope, we can much better predict the movements of it. So all of the sensors that are built into it are just fine, and that's, you know, it's fantastic to have this, but there's a whole pile of variables that come into towing. There's, you know, there's drift off to one side if you're engaging the ground. There's, you know, the turning radius and how that affects where any of these outer points are. So they limit the size of your product, but they also most likely limit you that if you're buying a Case autonomous tractor, you're probably buying Case implements only. Because nobody is going to allow, or Case is not going to allow Seedmaster in, not right away anyway. So we'll be a latecomer to the game. We'll have a huge disadvantage. Whereas our product, in and of itself, yes, we got a Seedmaster seeder on there because we're designing stuff under, and building this under cover. But the intention all along was to bring other implement manufacturers along for the ride, especially the shortline guys who don't get a lot of love from the big OEMs. So we believe that this is going to decrease farmer choice, just like a lot of the other own the data, own the farmer, own the farm piece that David was talking about. We're going to need data to be able to provide full value on our product. However, we don't have the same kind of trajectory, not at least not on our roadmap. Part of that own the farmer is to make sure that if you're on a Deere platform, you only run Deere equipment. And we don't believe that provides value to the farm long term. That locks down and decreases the value that it brings to the farm. So we were really happy about this, and we were okay with kind of where it landed. We've had a lot of discussions with them. Most of the people, whether they're telling us the truth or not, they didn't know who we were, but the most of the Case folks don't see it coming to market within the next 5 to 6 years. They're taking some of the turn compensation and some of the other products that they're developing with it and building them into their products today. But they saw this more as a gimmick at the outset. I think that it's got there's some value in it, but I don't know that Case is really keen because this is a single size, you know, only one set of options. You might have some tire options, and that'll be about it. Case is built to sell you a variety of options to make sure that there are 6 or 8 different configurations of any given tractor, so that, you know, so that they can hit the biggest part of the market. But what we think that they're missing there is that they're missing the devaluation or the depreciation in real terms of the equipment that they're selling. And we think that by having a standard product, we can get around that. So I'm going to skip over this because that's Norbert's and this is his presentation. But there are some benefits on fill time. But really, at the end of the day, we wanted to get smaller units and remotely monitored autonomous units that would be able to be to lower labor costs and standardize some of the operations on the farm. So this is not the most recent screen grab, but you can't see it here. But there are little green lines going up there. You might be able to see it, and maybe I can't. But as the video showed, we map this field, and then we create a predetermined path. We're not asking this thing to make decisions in the field. We are simply telling it where to go. And if it doesn't stay on that track, it stops and lets us know. There's very little risk, as David referred to earlier, lowering the risk to the farmer. There's very little risk of this thing doing anything other than what it's supposed to, because it shuts down when it doesn't. There's a geofence around here. It can't operate outside of it. Same with any internal boundaries that you provide for a slough or any other obstacles. If you forget to define an obstacle, It'll let you know when it finds it. Currently, the LiDAR that we're utilizing on it can pick up a 1 foot cube object, and that we believe is actually small enough that it could create, in certain scenarios, unintended problems in picking up things that we don't want to pick up. So that's where the bulk of the work is going right now in the back end AI and between within the sensor fusion that allows it to truly make some decisions on that, but that's going to take some time to work out. Most of what we're picking up from a sensor technology perspective, from the back end coding, is coming out of the autonomous car industry. 25,000 this year, 100,000 in 2020. They're actually writing laws to allow the car companies to break the laws in order to drive this forward in the U.S. And that's not the only place. It's rampant in the U.K. and Australia and other areas. But really, this has allowed companies like ourselves to pick up sensors that used to be $10,000 for $1,000 or less, and that price is going down dramatically on an almost monthly basis, and quality is going up. So we really feel that this is a lot going to allow entrants like ourselves to be players. This is a forecast of the autonomous vehicle shipments, and these are fully autonomous at the bottom in thousands, and the next one up is semi-autonomous and then traditional vehicle shipments. And I would argue that even in this, the semi-autonomous piece is probably a much greater proportion. If you look at adaptive cruise control on vehicles, and I don't know how many of you bought a vehicle in the last couple of years, but a lot of them have it. That is the type of technology that semi-autonomous cars are utilizing. All it's doing is throttling based on the speed and distance of the car ahead of you as to how fast you're going to keep you safer. And I was listening to a radio program on Sunday and talking about a reverse adaptive cruise control and the ability that that's going to give to make the highways more efficient. They're in testing, they're lowering trip times in urban areas on freeways by half or near half today, just simply by utilizing this rear and forward adaptive cruise control in order to generate the best place to be on the highway to make the best time. And that's only with a handful of vehicles among a larger, traditional vehicle set. So you can imagine the kinds of exponential change that this is going to bring to us. So we feel that agriculture is probably going to be, this is here this year. We feel that agriculture is probably going to be a little bit faster as far as a proportion of the overall vehicle sales, simply because, this technology is much less risky and it can drive back a much quicker payback on a farm when you look at labor and the lack thereof today. So the safety of autonomous vehicles, again, just to beat this home, at 5 miles an hour going down the field, that's not a freeway. We can stop anytime and just wait for somebody to come out and check it if we have to. And that's where trust can be gained. How do you earn trust in a current autonomous car? You get in it, you go down the freeway, and you cross your fingers and hope that it doesn't do the wrong thing. The other side of it for us is that we don't have the ethical dilemma when we're going down because we don't have somebody on board, we don't have the ethical dilemma whether to save the person in it and kill the person outside of it, or vice versa. We don't have to make that decision because there's nobody on it, it's moving slowly, all we want to do is stop in the safest possible manner. So really, again, the safety aspect of it, to me, is a no-brainer. So I've been asked why, and I relay this story whenever I speak, I was asked, what makes you think you can take on John Deere? And the first answer would be that, Norbert started Seedock with his brother over 25 years ago and took on that marketplace. It took on John Deere and the big players right away, Flexicoil at the time, and built a very successful business, has again done it with Seedmaster. And if not us first, who? Who's going to do it? Because they can't sit there at the top forever. And really, at the end of the day, we didn't even think about it. We didn't want them to know what we were doing because there's intellectual property tied to it. There's a competitive advantage. But we don't sit around wondering, geez, I wonder how this is going to affect John Deere. We really don't care. And we're not going to care, and they don't really care what we do. We feel that, you know, a lot of people have asked whether or not we have heard from those players. We don't believe that we will until we've taken enough market share that they take that they sit up and notice. They don't want this to be the change in the market, but they can't afford to come after us, or they can't afford to replicate it, because if they do, they're going to tell everybody that what they're doing today is not right, that what they're doing today is not the future. And so we feel pretty safe for a few years to plot along, you know, with a few units, say 25, 30 in 2019, and 100 and 200 after that. We don't see it as a barrier today. And further to that, when, you know, I was on a panel in December with John Deere, Case, and AGCO on the future of ag equipment, and they were asked why, when they see it being viable for them to bring autonomous equipment, and they all said 5+ years out. Now, I'm not sure if they were being fully honest, but the reality is, to them, 100 units doesn't get them out of bed in the morning. To me, 100 units is an entirely new business. So it comes down to scale, it comes down to the way that we pay attention to it, and it comes down, at the end of the day, to the way that we can drive value to farmers, because that will determine whether or not we're successful. So as I said, Norbert was going down the path of an autonomous seeder, and when he realized that it was pretty expensive to put an engine on a seeder and then park it for the rest of the year, he started looking at ways that he could detach it. And it's crazy simple, this U and the way that we pick it up, but you'd be surprised. There's not been anything developed that's been shown publicly that would denote, or that would, you know, remove our intellectual property that looks exactly like this. There's been lots of things that have been similar, and we've had people come to us and say, you know, I saw that on a drawing in an engineering office 20 years ago, but we scrapped it. We didn't think that it was legitimate. Now look, you guys have it. I have another equipment manufacturer in Saskatchewan told me, he works with an engineer out of Europe, and he was at a trade show last year in February, so just under a year ago, and the guy drew him essentially this. And when we launched Dodd and we announced it publicly, it was in the news, he phoned the guy and he said, you might want to drive about 50 miles away from you right now, because exactly what I drew you is in the market today. So you laughed at me, but here it is. So it's, you know, we're pretty happy with it. All it is a simple U with a walking beam on the back and the engine compartment up here, where you don't have to take off half the cab to get at it. And, you know, an accessible unit, and it can pick up any purpose-built implement. This is just a picture of it overhead, same day that we shot that other video. Specifications are generally the same as they were earlier. The only thing that's changed from the video is that right now we're getting 170 horsepower of the exact same engine in Tier 4 Final. A year from now, we'll be taking delivery of Tier 5 at 200 horsepower. So we got plenty of power today, and we're adding to it simply from an emissions change. So we're really excited about that. That's given us some additional juice behind it to run some other things that we've been looking at. So what can DOT do? This is a list. You can't really see it very well. Across the top are a bunch of numbered functions. You can find it on our website. But these are 108 implements that we've come up with so far that we feel can be run with DOT. Some of them require modifications, some of them don't. But they cross the expanse of broadacre agriculture, row crop agriculture, forestry, mining, road construction, building construction. There's really not much of a limit on what you could put on it. And the beauty of these implements is that they're a lot cheaper to make than the ones that you tow, the ones that you fold and operate in today's market. So there's a list on our website, and the reason that we had to publish it is so that other manufacturers, the ones that we want to cooperate with, don't go and patent something that would block us from working with a variety of manufacturers in that space, because we want to be able to provide farmers not with a small curated group of implement manufacturers. We want to have it open to the biggest, the smallest, and everybody in between, so that we can provide the most value with our power platform. So today we've got 30 manufacturers that we're working with. We aren't quite ready to announce who they are yet. We're still working through some engineering requirements for them. We expect to be able to announce 2 to 4 by June. The costs of licensing are going to be as low as possible, as I said, because we're really excited to be able to provide the names that you trust, not a rock picker by Seedmaster, but a rock picker by somebody who actually makes rock pickers, because we don't know that business, but we'd love to make one, or love to have one on it. The other area that's exciting, and this comes down a lot to farm safety, is manual control around the farmyard. We've spoken to several auger and conveyor manufacturers that have a keen interest in putting their units on DOT, and one thing that, when we drive the DOT unit around the yard in order to load up the seeder or the sprayer that we built or the grain cart or the roller that we've got, it's a totally different experience as opposed to sitting up in a four-wheel drive tractor driving around your yard. You can, if you've got any doubt, you can walk around the other side and you can actually take a look. And if you think of, backing up a grain auger to a large bin and trying to, get it in that 24-inch or smaller hole at the top in order to load that unit or load that bin, and you're backed up and you're looking around, and a lot of farmers have been, they're north of 50, and turning around like that isn't always the most comfortable thing. I'm even a few years younger than that, and it hurts some days. Being able to walk around it with a remote control just seems like a logically a better way to do it. And that remote control that was in the video, we've already done away with that. We found something that's better and cheaper. And the other cool thing that we've got, if you looked at that that map that I showed you, that's on a tablet, that's on a Microsoft Surface. We've actually overlaid a virtual remote control on it, so there's the knobs that are on the controller are sitting on there, and you just put your fingers on it and run it. I haven't got the video of it yet loaded into the presentation, but it's really, really neat to see. And then we can put cameras actually on the implement. We can see where we're at, not just from the ground, but from up, from up in the air and that kind of thing. As far as distribution, we're not certain that the dealers that we work with Seedmaster are going to be all that friendly to us. So we've been looking at other potential distribution models. One thing that's intrigued us is Tesla. Tesla's gone to the market with no dealerships. You go to Calgary, you want to go to the Tesla store, it's right next to Victoria's Secret in the mall. Down in the underground parking, they've got a handful of cars that you can test drive. We don't necessarily feel like we're going to sell farm equipment in an environment like that, although maybe some of the guys' wives would like that. But we do feel like there's a potential to challenge the status quo with respect to the number of dealerships that dot the map, because at the end of the day, the only people that are paying for our distribution model of any kind, and particularly in the ag equipment business right now, the only people that pay for that are our customers. So if they're not getting strong value out of that, how well are we treating that customer who's really paying our salaries, who's really keeping our doors open? If we're not spending our money like it's your money as a farmer, then we're doing a disservice to you. And so we feel like now is the time to challenge it. We may still end up with a similar type model, and we may still end up in a John Deere or a New Holland dealership. But we think that now's the time to rethink it when we don't have to look at a legacy behind us. Having the ability to do remote diagnostics on this unit takes away a lot of the need to have people at a physical location. We'd rather invest our money in things like mobile service units. So we don't think that farmers see as much value in utilizing a $30 million dealership as they do in utilizing their state-of-the-art farm shop, as is the case in a lot of places. Other efficiencies, by having a standard platform, our training's easier. Fewer options mean fewer parts to hold. A few guys that I've talked to have said, if I had 6 units, I'd put a replacement engine on the shelf. Why wouldn't I? if they're all the same, if it can be swapped between any of them, why wouldn't I look at that? That lowers my risk. That means, you know, the dealership, if there is one close to me, that dealership doesn't have to carry it. I'll have it and I'll know that I have it. I can rely on myself and I don't have to rely on somebody else who maybe just hired a new supply chain manager who thinks they're going to turn the world on fire by dumping all their inventory. You know, parts delivery and support. There's a lot of really innovative things going into parts delivery or and other services. There's actually a supermarket in Japan that utilizes data on people movement and can tell what neighborhood is most likely to need food right now. And it's an autonomous truck that drives to the next neighborhood, sides open up, and you can go in and buy food. There's no reason why we can't do things like that within agriculture. Maybe not exactly the same, but we can utilize similar principles in order to drive more efficiency and value to the farm. And then as far as data collection, you know, again, we do need to have some data to provide safety and other efficiency pieces back to the farmer. But at the end of the day, all we want to do is standardize our data feeds so that the folks like the usual suspects in the marketplace and the smaller players have an opportunity to provide services to you guys. As far as scalability goes, many people have said, oh, that looks good. You know, 30-foot machine really looks good. That's what the cedar is, or a 60-foot sprayer. That looks good for a small farm, but it really wouldn't work for a large farm. But I think you'd be surprised when we start looking at the cost, and when we look at two of these units with, say, two 30-foot cedars and two 60-foot sprayers and two power units at about the same cost as one 60-foot air cedar with a cart and a tractor that has enough horsepower to pull it, we're actually providing the sprayers for nothing, as long as you don't need them while you're seeding. And there are certain logistical challenges, but at the end of the day, we believe that we can come with a much more scalable product than, say, you know, adding 1,000 acres to your farm or 1,500 acres to your farm and having to trade in a large amount of your equipment and, you know, move up in size, or add some used product which requires more operators, which requires more upkeep. All those things, we believe we can challenge again the status quo. Used equipment valuation, having a power platform that's universal, that can be moved not just within agriculture from an asset utilization standpoint, but outside of agriculture, allows us to do some things that, you know, to raise the overall value of the unit. And, you know, further to that, allows us to do some things like power by the hour, which may be later in here, it looks like it's changed, but which is basically a leasing program for farms. Dealerships, they are quite reluctant to do that, to rent or to lease a tractor, because it, you know, as it goes off the lot, it decreases in value significantly. And what am I going to do with it when I get it back? Well, this increases the number of things that we can do with it when we get it back. Lifestyle. You know, this is an area that we haven't touched on a whole bunch, but I think that there's a lot of opportunity. I'm the father of a child with disabilities, and so this is near and dear to me. I don't think he's going to be a farmer, but you know, there are farmers who either acquired or through at birth have some accessibility issues, and I think that this tells a really good story about that. Both people that maybe normally would look at farming and say, I can do this as long as dad's here, but I don't know if I can do it after, or I can do this as long as my son wants to keep doing it with me, but, you know, once I get to a certain age, I might not be able to keep it up. But, you know, we've been hearing the story about the aging farm population for a lot of years, and I think that, you know, from an accessibility, from a, you know, age standpoint, it provides some opportunities. There's a guy in Alberta that came to me after a talk in November and said, you know, I'm 70. I was kind of thinking I had about 3-4 more years in me. If you can give this to me in the next 3 to 5 years, I'll farm till I'm 80. Then I don't have to lift anything. Everything's automated for me. You know, it's a good choice for me. What am I going to do when I'm done farming? This is all I know. This is what I love. And that's inspiring to me, because I think that we're expanding the way that people see their careers, and you know, maybe some Farmers don't think of it as a traditional career, but it obviously is. It's a job. It's a way of life. And I think that there's, you know, some opportunity there to look at those kinds of societal impacts and high-tech jobs in rural areas with respect to the support network. So this is a quote that was put on Twitter in relation to a conversation around DOT. And I'll be honest, Jim Hale's a Seedmaster owner, so we have a particular fondness for him. But tractors have no chance to compete with horses unless they can raise the young tractor every second or third year. That was 1923, and I think that guy's probably long gone, or certainly long gone, but I think that we all know that he was wrong, and that's why, you know, we don't see it as a huge risk to challenge the status quo. So here's that quote again. You know, you don't change by fighting the existing reality. And we don't see the existing reality as being sustainable in a lot of different ways, as I've explained. And so, you know, we feel like we've got something that potentially could make the existing model obsolete. So I'm well over my time, but thanks for coming. These are some of our social media channels. We're on Twitter very heavily. I spend a lot of time on there, probably more than I should. But I welcome questions either here in front of everyone or after the fact, or through any of these channels. We make sure that we answer the questions openly and honestly. And if we don't have an answer, we don't give one. We're right up front with that. So if you've got anything, can I take a question or two? If anyone's got a question. Up here?
So can you just repeat the question a little bit?
Yeah, so the question was around the tires that are on it, that were on it at Ag in Motion. Those tires are no longer on it. So, you know, we obviously learning all the time. So it's got a more appropriate amount of rubber under it today. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yep. Here. So the question is, what's the current vision for transport today from a road transport, just regulatory point of view? We got to put it on a trailer to drive it that far. It's not called a trailer. If we build it as a trailer, it's got a whole bunch of other certifications. It's a wagon. But I didn't say trailer. But we're working with SGI in Saskatchewan, who governs the roadways, and they're willing to shut down a series of roads for us to do some testing on. Our main driver, our main vision with it is that we would drive a safe path down the road, so where you'd normally drive your tractor down the road, or not a tractor with a big implement, but something more reasonable. So you'd drive that with your pickup truck with a GPS, and then you'd drive a safe pullover zone on the shoulder. And as soon as it sensed that a vehicle was coming in front or behind it, it would simply pull over to that safe pullover zone on the shoulder. And then once everything was free, it would carry on. We see that being a evolution around that travel, where it would have a bit, you know, down the road that maybe it would cross a major roadway, or it would, you know, those kinds of things. But some of that would be governed, obviously, by some of those rules. But SGI was very, very interested. We've been working with them. So we released this in June, end of June, early July. We started working with them in March last year in order to give them a heads up as to what we were doing so that we didn't get shut down. We worked with them and Department of Transportation and a few others that were that we knew would be interested. So we see that as the most likely path to it, because we don't need to do it any more complicated than that. But I'm sure as the autonomous car decision-making piece comes along, we should be able to adopt that as soon as it becomes economically viable.
There was a question just further up from there.
Yeah, so we've got the components coming for 6 units. Yeah, so most likely near Regina, so that we can babysit them a little bit. That's the interest from the implement manufacturers that we've spoken to take one or two of those is kind of impacting our planning a little bit. So I've asked for a few more, but I've been told that, yeah, we're trying to keep it to six. So the goal would be six this year, 25 in 2019. And as I said, like 100, then 250 is kind of our ramp up. So it's a pretty steep ramp. But we see the demand from people has been significant enough that we feel that there's an opportunity there. We've done some seeding with it. We haven't put like the whole farm in. So yeah, the Seedmaster Research Farm, which is only a couple hours out of here, south of Whitewood, Saskatchewan, we intend on seeding the entire farm with it this year and doing all the spraying with it. So oh wow. Yes. So the question was whether or not we've thought about cultivating between 15-inch rows. The answer is yes, and I expect by 2019 that we'll have a product in the marketplace that will address that. So, you know, looking at herbicide-resistant weeds, yes.
Any other questions? If not... Okay. Trent, thank you for spending your time with us here today in Brandon. Can we just show our appreciation, please?
Thanks for tuning in to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast. We'll see you next year from January 22nd to 24th, 2019. Thanks for tuning in to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast. We'll see you next year from January 22nd to 24th, 2019.